8, verses 1 through 4, and then verses 22 through 31. Does not wisdom call and understanding raise her voice? On the heights, beside the way, at the crossroads, she takes her stand, beside the gates in front of the town. At the entrance of the portal, she cries out, "To you, O people, I call, and my cry is to all who live. The Lord created me at the beginning of his work, the first of his acts of long ago. Ages ago, I was set up at the first, before the beginning of the earth. When there were no depths, I was brought forth. When there were no springs abounding with water, before the mountains had been shaped, before the hills, I was brought forth. When he had not yet made earth and fields or the world's first bits of soil. When he established the heavens, I was there. When he drew a circle on the face of the deep. When he made firm the skies above. When he established the fountains of the deep. When he assigned the sea its limit, so that the waters might not transgress his command. When he marked out the foundations of the earth, then I was beside him like a master worker, and I was daily his delight, playing before him always, playing in his inhabited world and delighting in the human race." When I was looking at Psalm 8 this week, it reminded me very much of a piece that the choir sings, Majesty and Glory. So if you ever wondered where the text came for that piece of music, it came from Psalm 8. O Lord, our sovereign, how majestic is your name in all the earth. You have set your glory above the heavens. Out of the mouths of babes and infants, you have founded a bulwark because of your foes, to silence the enemy and the avenger. When I look at your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars that you have established, what are humans that you are mindful of them, mortals that you care for them? Yet you have made them a little lower than God and crowned them with glory and honor. You have given them dominion over the works of your hands. You have put all things under their feet, all sheep and oxen, and also the beasts of the field, the birds of the air, and the fish of the sea, whatever passes along the paths of the seas. O Lord, our sovereign, how majestic is your name in all the earth.
It is truly summer in earnest now, and we have confirmed our amazing class of confirmands last week, and graduations have occurred, and it's just that season. So I wanted to talk to you today on the topic of wisdom, and I wanted to look at the book of Proverbs to do it. Proverbs tends to be a favorite of many churchgoers because it features a lot of fairly short, intensely practical sayings that might fit on a bumper sticker or a Twitter feed. Preachers tend to think that preaching on Proverbs is among the hardest of homiletical tasks because there's nowhere to hang your hat. There's no story, there's no narrative, there's no once upon a time, there's no a man had two sons or a sower went out to sow, and you can't like make it any shorter because it's so short to start with. It lacks the poetic panache of the Psalms or the flow of a good historical tale. It would fit on a fortune cookie. It's preachable, it's just different. Proverbs are beloved, and you may not even know that you love them. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding, is from Proverbs. Train up a child in the way that he shall go, and when he's old, he will not depart from it, is from Proverbs. There's also a sort of a category of sexist proverbs in the category of take my wife, please, that you sort of have to read. In the New Living Translation, Proverbs 21:19, it's better to live alone in the desert than with a crabby, complaining wife. And somewhat longer, Proverbs 27, a quarrelsome wife is as annoying as constant dripping on a rainy day. Stopping her complaints is like trying to stop the wind or trying to hold something with greased hands. All I can say is in response is, on Sundays we smash the patriarchy. There are also proverbs that make you go, huh? Like Proverbs 27:14, if a man loudly blesses his neighbor early in the morning, it will be taken as a curse. Now, Proverbs 8 gives us a bit of a story, at least more than these one-liners, about the nature of wisdom. Wisdom in the Bible can mean being skilled at something, knowing how to do something right, like how to sew a prayer shawl or how to build a Journey to Bethlehem shelter, being cunning or crafty. You know, Jesus is saying, be wise as serpents and innocent as doves. It can also be, if you're faithful and righteous, you are wise. We would say that if we were going to define wisdom, it's about knowledge, but there's a little something more involved. It's also about experience too, right? You can be smart and not be wise. Like the time my uncle, who's a brain surgeon, ran his car completely out of oil because he didn't know you had to change it from time to time. The man's brilliant. Wisdom is something that we get from sages, maybe after climbing big mountains in Nepal or after sitting at the feet of wise elders. It's born of knowing and of living. My dad tells a story when he was a little boy. His granddad had a pasture, and it had an electric fence because it had a bull in it. It had an old, mean bull. And Dad knew about electricity, I mean intellectually, but there was something in him that wanted to touch that fence. But he was at least smart enough and wise enough to go to his granddad. So he went to Daddy Roe, and he said, I want to touch that fence. That's original sin right there. That's the forbidden fruit. It's just Genesis all over again. So his granddaddy said, his granddaddy could have said, well, son, the voltage running through that is approximately X amperes. And it's sort of like, Eric, how you would approach it. It would be very like I'm going to teach you all about it. But this was not Granddaddy Rose's approach. He was more of an experienced man. So he looked down at my dad and he said, son, all I can say is, I wouldn't. That's a man that understands there's some experience in wisdom. I wouldn't. We tend to think of wisdom as something elusive and hidden and hard to get. Job talks about wisdom like that. He says, where is wisdom to be found? It is hidden from the eyes of all the living, and only God knows its dwelling place. Wisdom here in Proverbs 8 is personified as a woman. And the words for wisdom in Hebrew and in Greek are feminine nouns, Chokmah and Sophia. And wisdom is a woman calling out in the street. She's on the sidewalk in front of Starbucks. She's at intersections wanting to wash your windshield. She's at gates and she's in doorways. And she's hawking her wares Like when you go to a ball game and they want to sell you that bottle of water for like a dollar that's going to be $3 in the stadium. Only instead of selling something cheap, she's offering wisdom. Her problem is not that she's hidden. She's out there where everybody can see her. She seems to be right out there. She has insight and strength and truth and righteousness. And what she lacks are customers, people interested in buying what she has to sell. She says, "By me, rulers rule, and nobles, all who govern rightly. I love those who love me, and those who seek me diligently find me. Riches and honor are with me, enduring wealth and prosperity. My fruit is better than gold." She's not pithy. She's not a bumper sticker creation. But she has found the pathway that leads to life and health and peace. And she's proclaiming to all who will listen. And most especially, she's proclaiming to people on the margins, people who society would say has no worth. She calls out to the genius and the dunce alike. She's just out there calling. It's not that wisdom is just for the super geniuses of this world. It's available to all, she says. What we also know about wisdom from Scripture, and this is important, wisdom, while available to all, is tied to God. Proverbs 9 reminds us that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of all wisdom. Fear in the sense of awe and reverence and worship, and knowing that God is God and we are not. When it comes to wisdom, that's the anchor, the start, the seed of it. And the writer of Proverbs makes woman wisdom the first of God's creations and also a co-creator with God. All that part about in the beginning I was brought forth. Later writers would tie this early presence with God at creation to Jesus, the divine word, proclaiming as John did, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and He was in the beginning with God, and all things came into being through Him, and without Him, not one thing came into being. Creation, right? What came into being in Him was life, and that life was the light of all people, and the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it. Wisdom. Creation. And in Jesus' life and death and resurrection, we further come to know what God's wisdom is. Now, the world's notion of wisdom doesn't always mesh well with this Jesus notion of wisdom. We proclaim that a man who ate with tax collectors and sinners, who said that the poor were blessed and the meek were blessed and the peacemakers are blessed, we proclaim that he is the source and the embodiment of all wisdom. The one who gave his life as a ransom for all, giving it up without firing a gun, telling us not to repay evil for evil, telling us to love our enemies and pray for those who persecute us. If woman wisdom were in the street shouting sayings of Jesus, she still wouldn't have any customers, right? Is it any wonder when Jesus said, "Take up your cross and follow me," there wasn't a huge line? The cross was an executioner's tool. It was like if somebody would say, go find an electric chair with your name on it and come follow me. It sounds more like foolishness than wisdom, right, to the world. But we proclaim that this Jesus is what wisdom looks like and sounds like. It's countercultural. It's upside down. Paul puts it this way in 1 Corinthians chapter 1. "The message of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, but to those who are being saved, it is the wisdom of God. For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, and the intelligence of the intelligent I will frustrate. Where is the wise person? Where is the teacher of the law? Where is the philosopher of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? Jews demand signs and Greeks look for wisdom, but we preach Christ crucified. A stumbling block to Jews and foolishness to Gentiles. But to those whom God has called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ is the power of God and the wisdom of God. The foolishness of God is wiser than human wisdom, and the weakness of God is stronger than human strength. That's the wisdom of God. Seeking always to do God's will, and it is upside down very often from that which the world would point to as wise. It's not always what the world says, but rather when we look at things from God's point of view, through the lens of Jesus Christ, through the lens of his crucifixion, his death, his resurrection, his life, his teachings, then we will know what is wise. And the paradox is, if we seek after God's definition of wisdom, serving others, washing feet, learning how to love as Jesus loved, we will become more wise in the eyes of God and also more humble. But that's another sermon. Another thing we learn about wisdom, particularly from this passage, we see woman wisdom as a partner in God's delight in creation. Wisdom is a little bit about joy. Wisdom is about joy, delight. Discipleship has at its core deep joy. Seeking Christ and finding him. Joy. We read in Proverbs, then I was beside him like a master worker. I was daily his delight, rejoicing before him always, rejoicing in his inhabited world and delighting in the human race. One writer compared this image of wisdom as a presence at creation. It's almost like wisdom is a little child and God is like a mother, stirring the pot of creation with one hand and holding a laughing baby on their hip with the other. You know, women seeking after God's wisdom as children play with toys on the floor and eat cupcakes. It's a nice image. Creation still continues today. God is at work in the world today. Divine wisdom still plays around God's feet and assists in the work of living and growing. It's not that God made the world and then set it in motion and abandoned it. We see God's continuing creation happen in every season. Every time the leaves pop out and the seasons change. We see it in every new baby that's born, in every new beginning, in every aha moment. We hear God, the master builder, whistling at creation. The divine breath and the word and the whistler still telling us chaos and darkness and ignorance will never have the last word. God's wisdom cries out to us still, seeking us. And we can connect with God's wisdom best in Jesus Christ, the truest reflection of who God is. As I often recite to you from John, no one has ever seen God, but it is the Son who is close to the Father's heart who has made God known. But that's not the only place we can get a glimpse of God's wisdom and God's pleasure in creation. There's an older movie called Chariots of Fire, and the main character who is a runner, says, God made me for a purpose, but God also made me fast. And when I run, I feel God's pleasure. God made you and God made me for a purpose. Love of God, love of neighbor, using our gifts in God's service. But God also places, I think, in the human spirit, a hunger for true wisdom. And when we glimpse it, when we touch it, I think we feel God's pleasure. I know English majors who love Shakespeare, not because they like rhyming poetry, but because sometimes in Shakespeare, they see a truth about God and humanity. I know scientists who say they see glimpses of God in their learning, for whom the heavens are telling the glory of God. I know mathematicians who point to the beauty of mathematics as one of the reasons that they believe in God. I know carpenters who feel God's pleasure when they make a solid corner or smooth off an edge. I know teachers who hear angels sing when a kid's eyes light up in sudden understanding. Now, I'm not trying to say that everything we love is good and telling us stuff about God, but I am saying that grace is at work in the world, and sometimes we get glimpses of God. And when we do, there is wisdom. Wisdom is not just amassing abstract knowledge. Wisdom is seeking after the things of God. Wisdom is wisdom because it has a glimpse of the divine, a link to God's abundant life, and a pathway to the coming of God's kingdom. A place where the will of God is done on earth as it is in heaven. Wisdom is delighted when people come to worship on a warm Sunday morning. Wisdom is delighted when people type in our website to experience our worship in their home. Wisdom is delighted when people come to the font and to the table to be washed and to be fed. Wisdom is delighted when people make promises to serve Jesus Christ in a world with so many other lords to choose from. Paul writes in Romans 12, "Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your minds, so that you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect." Wisdom is not a fortune cookie or a meme or a bumper sticker. Wisdom is a way of living with God. It's choosing to be faithful when it would be easier to be popular. It's kneeling when every ounce of our ego wants to stand up. It's emptying ourselves and taking the servant's place. It's praying and working and growing and learning until we have the mind of Christ and the heart of Christ and the hands of Christ. That's what it means to be wise. Amen.